Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Micro Brands. All right, so on today's show, we're going to be sticking to a theme that we've had over the last couple of weeks, and that's privacy. And Tom McNamara, the host of Data Privacy Pod and founder of Apex Privacy, is going to be joining us today. And we're going to be talking about how you can protect yourself and what you should and shouldn't do with your information or others' information. So, Kelsey, where are you, sir?
Hello.
Well, you're there and you weren't late.
I know, it's quick.
Hey, that was good. All right, so what do we got going today?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. All right. So you guys know the drill. Please head over to our Facebook group, Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and E-commerce Collective. That's where all the good stuff is. We'll be announcing a contest shortly too. So we'll do like a big contest for everyone, but also we'll have a contest specifically for our Beard Nation that we got going over there. And I see, welcome Fatiha. Good afternoon. And Kingsford,
very and nice. You too, Kingsford. You. Hey, how's it going, yep. Fatia?
Yeah, we'd right. love to have like a meetup or sometime with everyone.
Once I can get across the border.
Yeah, that would help.
Yeah, let's but yeah, get a welcome petition everyone. Going. Get Norm across the border.
But yeah, so if you have any, if you want to watch the daily highlights, or if you miss an episode and you want to check it out, you can always go over to our YouTube page, Norman Farrar. That's where all the good stuff is. Welcome, Rad. Marina, how's everyone doing? How's their Wednesday? Is there any updates going on with you guys, with your Amazon businesses? We'd love to hear how things are going. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it on my side.
From Ghana.
Smash those like.
Wow, Kingsford. That's a first.
Yeah, great. But yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to put them in the comment section. I'll be in there. Talking to everyone, and yeah, we'll have our weekly clubhouse next week. We'll pick that up again, and yeah, looking forward to this episode.
Very good. Okay, so let's see, where should we start? How about if you throw your questions or comments over in the right hand side, and why don't we just get right into it? So just sit back, grab that cup of coffee, and enjoy the episode. Hey Tom.
Hey Norm, how's things?
It's going great. So I'm just hoping, hey guys, if this is my new mic, you know, if you've heard, I got this new stupid mic, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Let me know if it's working and what the sound's like. But anyways, let's see how it goes. I'm sure we'll hear a couple. Oh, the volume's too low, the volume's too high. I'll figure this out. I think I can do that. I'm old, you know. But anyways, Tom, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you're doing?
Sure thing. So I'm an international privacy compliance consultant, and I founded Apex Privacy basically off the back of the GDPR and the kind of disruption that that was causing, mainly tech companies, because that's the area that I decided to focus on. Because I came from financial services, which has like a long history of compliance and regulation, similar to pharmaceuticals and the likes of that. But really, the GDPR was one of the first main regulations that tried to put one of the first laws that tried to put some rules around tech and how tech companies operated. So, yeah, that's how Apex Privacy came to be founded. So I help very much companies that have an international footprint. They have clients across the globe comply with what we have now, which is the onslaught of data privacy regulations. So a lot of my US clients are kind of pulling their hair out, because every other week or every other month, there's a different state that's announcing a different set of rules. And they really want to know, okay, how do you approach this in a strategic manner to be able to like comply with all the different rules that are being thrown at us? On top of that, I do the Data Privacy Pod, which is me trying to make sense of the world of data privacy and how it's changing and how it's evolving, and talking to different experts in their field. So, yeah, kind of that's me in a nutshell.
Well, we'll make sure that we put a link into the comment section so people can take a listen to your podcast. One of the things I was wondering, so how do you define or what is data privacy? And we're not talking about security, right? It's completely different.
Most definitely. So what I like to say to people is that security is usually trying to keep people out, you know, keep your data safe within the business and kind of keep bad actors out, whether they're staff internally that are gone astray or they're like hackers and the likes of that. So security is kind of securing your house, whereas data privacy is more around the rules that you need to follow internally with the data that you have in your possession. So that's kind of where the distinction comes. It's more about, okay, you've got this data. How can you use it? Do you have the right permissions to use it? To what extent it can be used, and what sort of rights individuals have over that data that you're essentially a custodian of.
Okay. Before we get any further, we do have a giveaway today, and just wanted to have you explain what the giveaway is going to be.
Sure. So like you mentioned, for your international listeners, that I'm going to do a GDPR assessment. So this assessment is priced nearly $10,000. And what we do is we look at the business. We do an exercise which is called data flow mapping, which is a really important aspect of both compliance, but it's really good for businesses as well to actually understand how data comes into their business. Once it's within their business, where does it sit? What systems does it touch? What third parties is it shared with? And ultimately, and the part that people forget about, is that you're supposed to delete data when it's no longer serving its purpose. So we really look at the whole life cycle of the data, and we do that on a software, one of our partners. And our partners will offer a 1-year free subscription along with that. So we'll do the assessment, and they'll have like a compliance software there for the year to work on and really like secure their data and ensure compliance with specifically the GDPR. So while our framework looks at global standards, we're specifically looking at the GDPR in this assessment. So anybody who's looking to expand into Europe or has clients in Europe and is kind of playing that game of, okay, we're fine, let's just wait and see, they should get real value out of knowing exactly what risks they are and if there's any kind of improvements that might be able to be made in order to secure themselves and like future-proof their business.
Well, that's great. And you don't have to be an international seller for this, but this could be, you know, if you're an American seller and you want to get into the overseas market, to have that assessment as well. Is that correct?
Most definitely, yeah. And So it's only at the very end of the assessment that we start mapping on the GDPR rules. At the outset, it's very much about you internally knowing your data, knowing where it's coming from, knowing what you have permission to do. If you need to change your policies or what sort of permissions and consents you're looking for to allow you to do different things with your data, which you want to do, then we're there to help you identify exactly how data flows through the business and how you can use it in the safest manner.
Okay, so this is a great giveaway from Tom. If you want to enter the giveaway, just hashtag I want Tom. And if you want a double entry, tag two people and we'll get you into this twice. Anyways, and by the way, so, and I know there's a couple of people on here that nag me a few times that, hey, we don't have enough international giveaways. Well, we have one now. So there we go. Okay. So let's start talking about some of the simple things people can do to protect themselves or what they need to understand about data privacy.
Yeah. So a big thing with data privacy is that while there's new laws kind of coming up on, as I said, nearly a weekly or monthly basis, they all kind of stem from the same principles. So there's an international like concept of data privacy by design. And essentially what they want to get to is that the data that you use within your business, that you've got permission to use that, that the individuals whose data you have are informed about what you'll do with their data. So that's really the first step. It's like understanding whose data you have and understanding how exactly they understand themselves about what your uses of their data are. And this is, as I was mentioning around the assessment piece, it usually starts at like a data mapping exercise or a data flow exercise where you're saying, okay, I'm getting my orders fulfilled from Amazon. So we've got our accounts there and we can see it deliveries or we can see different information about an individual. How does that individual expect their data to be used? And that's really where a lot of complaints or where actions arise or problems arise is when businesses start using data or abusing data, really, that they are using it in a way that the individuals don't expect or that they're kind of taken by surprise or something along those lines. So that right to information and your responsibility to make sure that people know how their data is being used is really one of the first principles that's going to help you stay out of trouble, essentially. So if you're being fair with individuals, if you're like, just, I said, like, you don't have to be sleazy about how you go about collecting data. There is certain companies that will kind of by hook or by crook want every piece of data on an individual. But I suppose understanding exactly what individuals have given you permission to do is a really good place to start, because you should be able to stay out of trouble if people see you as an honest business, as a business that's doing the right thing by them.
So one of the things that's driving me crazy right now is when I go to websites and you are forced to hit that accept cookie. So they'll block, like, let's say it's a video, they'll block the play button until you hit the accept cookie. I'm just curious, with the companies that do that, I don't want them having my information. And if I allow them to have my cookie, you know, is there a way to give a partial cookie? I don't know.
Yeah, so cookies are getting a lot of airtime, especially over here in the EU. I guess the good or the bad news is that cookies are being done away with. So Google have come out to say that they're going to phase out third-party cookies by the end of this year. Now, there's people we're still waiting to see if that'll actually happen within that timeline, given how COVID has disrupted a lot of businesses and it isn't like a specific rule that Google has to follow other than an internal kind of decision. And that's kind of based on the back of Apple and their iOS 14 updates, where they've gone down the line of requiring consent for trackers. Especially, there's been a lot of apps, especially game apps, that get a lot of their revenue purely from advertisements sold within the games. And there's been a big upheaval around that. And I think Epic Games have taken Apple to court, and Facebook has been taking out like full page advertisements, kind of calling out Apple. But what's really happening is that third-party cookies, and let's just put it this way, all cookies aren't bad. Like, there's an element to cookies that, okay, tracking, if it's done for nefarious purposes, isn't good. But if cookies are used in the right way, they can actually be beneficial. So myself, like, I know that if I land on a website and I accept cookies, I'm going to be served up advertisements across the web for that particular brand, because that's how they work. So knowing how that's how they work, I'm able to be scrolling and see something that interests me, but I don't have time to look into right now. I just click into the website, accept the cookies, and I know I'm going to have reminders kind of in my vision as I go along for at least the next week. So they can be used, but what we're seeing now is that a lot of big companies who own the platforms are saying, no, we don't want third-party trackers, we don't want cookies, in line, I suppose, with a strict reading of the GDPR and data privacy laws. We'll start to have more of a seamless internet experience again once these cookie changes happen.
Oh, I guarantee you, Tom, that Google or Apple or whoever these game makers are, they're going to make donuts or pudding or something, because they're going to gather their information. You know, it'll just be in a different way.
Yeah, so there's a real challenge out there, because even like Google and Apple have been taken to court now on antitrust, on the back of antitrust laws, saying that, oh, you've removed third-party trackers in line with privacy law, but that's just driving users deeper into your ecosystem. So Google now, how do you target individuals? Well, you have to rely on search. You have to rely on Google Ads. With Apple, if you can't track how people have left an advert, have left the platform and gone onto sites, then you have to look at what Apple are doing. And there's talks about Apple having their own advertising piece, their own search engine, stuff like that. So there's views out there that maybe they weren't done for the most wholesome purposes. But I guess a lot of the privacy pros and advocates are saying, no, the end of third-party trackers is nothing but a good thing. Then there's others saying, well, there's very big companies with very big platforms that are kind of shoring up their ecosystem and making sure it's harder for other people to start taking a slice of their pie.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to go down this path, but one of the things that just hits me now, we're talking about cookies. Well, mm-hmm. if we're in a cookieless environment in 2022, how's that going to affect affiliate marketers and other online businesses?
Yeah, there's a lot of people putting their heads together to try and understand that. I guess there'll be a lot more reliance on codes, like so to use a code to check out, and they'd have to have more of a closer relationship with individuals, or if sites are set up to have specific landing pages for their affiliates, so as they know exactly this traffic is coming specifically from this affiliate, because it's only this affiliate sending individuals to this landing page. But there is going to be an element of disruption to the affiliate marketing space, and I guess it's the smaller people there that are on ClickBank and just kind of getting a start, that don't have maybe the relationships with brands, that are going to either have to make changes, or they're going to lose revenue while I guess the industry figures itself out.
That's going to be a big shift.
Yeah, most definitely. And obviously you've got a lot of your Amazon people here. So how Amazon goes about being able to assign who exactly sent the traffic your way, because we're already seeing that there's a lot of anonymous data browsing, and like people are using things like DuckDuckGo and different browsers to protect their identity. Yeah.
I'm a DuckDuckGo guy.
Very good. So like we're starting to see a shift, and like there's big percentages of people going that direction. Now it's going to become more mainstream. And yeah, like really we haven't seen any solid solutions to this identification problem. So it is something that people will either have to keep in contact or keep reading updates from Amazon and from your affiliate partners to understand how exactly they're going to assign sales or assign commissions and sales to you, because third-party trackers might not work, especially when they're no longer available on Chrome, as they're not available on Safari, Mozilla, DuckDuckGo, and the likes of that.
You know, and this is such a broad topic. You know, you could probably talk about this for hours, but one of the things, like just a simple website, you know, just having, I go to a lot of sites that might be selling a product, and they could be Amazon or it could be just, you know, an e-com site, and they don't have certain things that could kill them. Terms of service, privacy, refund policy. I mean, nothing's on their website except copyright. You know, a lot of sellers don't understand the importance and the compliance that has to be met by putting these on your website. You want to get into that for a second?
Yeah, like they're really the basics. And when I was talking about the right to be informed, and where a lot of the trouble happens is when people have their data being used in ways that they don't expect. So like, while a privacy policy won't do much in terms of protecting you if you're still doing things that are illegal, if you can point to that privacy policy and say, no, it's quite clear here that we're an affiliate marketer and we're going to be sharing cookie information and tracking information with our partners, then you can point towards that and people will get a broad sense of this is the type of site I'm on and this is how my data is being used. But in general, if you don't have that type of documentation, the authenticity of your site and like kind of the red flags among users are going to go up. So if you're on a site now and it doesn't have a privacy policy, are you going to buy off that site? Are you going to trust the site? Because it's kind of, it's what you expect to see when you're browsing. It's kind of like going into one of those shops that don't have the price on anything. You're like, okay, now we're going to have to get like a special price when we go in here and it's probably going to be cash only and stuff like this. So I think it just really goes to the authenticity of the site and having the right documentation up there. And it really is, it's your first line of compliance when it comes to data privacy laws, because you're giving that information to the users and you're giving them the ability to contact you and let them know about what their rights are. And under the GDPR specifically, it's a requirement. Likewise, in the CCPA and the new Virginia Act, you're actually required to give individuals this information of how their data is used and how they can make a complaint and how what type of rights that they have.
Yeah, you were just telling me, I didn't know about that Virginia Act just before we got onto the call today. But let's talk about something that Amazon sellers do all the time. And that's sending out an insert, usually with a QR code or something that's going to grab the person's email. Mm-hmm. Now, are they in jeopardy? Like, is that legal to go out there? And you know, for me, before we started talking, you know, and I don't know what you're going to say, but I would have said, yeah, no problem. Like, I send out inserts all the time to people who buy my product. And I've got no problem like putting that QR code, sending them over and grabbing their information, either on chatbot or by email.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose there's an incentive there for them to scan the QR code. And there's a lot around messaging and like that's usually where you're positioning the value proposition. Like, so for example, what type of messaging would you have around like enticing someone to scan the QR code?
Well, it could be an add-on, like it could be just a sample pack, or it could be a chance to win something. It could be a PDF file, so a recipe mm-hmm. book if you're doing some kitchen products, you know. So there's a variety of different ways that you can entice somebody to scan that QR code. Some people use it just for registering, like warranty and registration. You know, that's mm-hmm. pretty simple.
Yeah. And like, that's where that conversation has happened. You know, ideally, there'd be references back once the QR code's scanned and then they're there and they're inputting their data. And that should link back to a privacy policy that says, this is your rights, this is what we're doing. But again, that's probably one of the more wholesome ways to go about collecting data, because you have that relationship with the individual. You're doing something unique. There's a value exchange as well. Like, everybody knows that when you're getting something for free online, there's usually a trade involved, and that trade is usually our data. So there's nothing wrong with being innovative. And what I always say to clients is that, like, the GDPR and the different data privacy rules, they're not going to stifle innovation. If anything, they're going to encourage it, because it's within those constraints. If you know, I guess, the rules of the game, and I always use the football analogy saying, okay, football has its rules. It's got its offside rules. It's got different rules. So you kind of,
are you talking bouncing. American football or
yeah,
soccer?
Yeah, see, I was trying to keep it as neutral as possible. I should have used a different example. But anyway, football has its rules. They're there. Everybody knows them. The two teams know that the coach knows it. And it's whoever can work the best within the confines of those rules are going to get ahead. So just because a law has come into place, it's not going to shut down everything that you do. It may make you think a little bit harder and get a little bit more creative, But if you know what the rules are and everybody has the same rules enforced on them, then those with the most creativity and the best tactics are going to win out at the end of the day. And there's no, like, it's not a rule against using data or collecting data. It's just more around respect for the individual and having some respect for how their data is used.
I've got a question. If you're on a public site, mm-hmm. so a person has got their information, their email, their phone number on a public site, mm-hmm. are you able to use it?
Yeah, so specifically within the GDPR, there's a call out for data that's been manifestly made public. And that's kind of an exemption when it comes to applying the rest of the rules, because that individual has made the decision to make that data available. And most US states, not like in the US, the laws are a bit looser. So definitely that data scraping aspect of it is generally okay, as long as you're not in contravention of the site's terms and conditions. So for example, if you're going onto LinkedIn and scraping LinkedIn data, if you're to read down into their terms of service, you're not actually allowed to do that. And that's usually the same, even with your kind of boilerplate policies and terms and conditions within your smaller sites, will usually just by definition, they'll always have that type of clause within it. In the GDPR world in Europe, it's getting a lot more sticky. It's getting a lot more contentious, even using that public data. But in general, in the US, you're quite safe. In the EU, you have to make sure that the platform allows you to use that data. And yeah, if you win the assessment, we can get into the weeds around that.
Okay, great. And again, to get that assessment, it's I Want Tom. And, you know, he's going to dive deep into your, hold it. I got to stop. Coffee. There we go. It's 12:30 right on. So Connie's bang on. There we go. Thank you. Okay. So now I'm completely forgot what I was going to say. But anyways, the what you're going to be doing and the audit that you're going to be providing is diving deep into what they're doing, either their website or how they're gathering data, if they're in compliance. So this is an incredible giveaway for anybody in the US or international that that wants to get Tom's info. And Tom, this is, this isn't something that you do on a regular basis. So, you know, we really appreciate you offering this service up. Now, Kels, are there any questions?
Yeah, so we had a couple of comments come in and a few questions. Mm-hmm. Let me see.
So I'm double fisting today, the Coke and the coffee.
Not enough caffeine.
No.
Okay. This is from Kingsford. What if you're in Africa, Ghana, and you need international leads to work with or even franchise?
Yeah, so we actually have seen some African countries bring in their own data privacy laws. Again, there's nothing wrong with using data and transferring it international. There's just rules being placed around it now. And what the EU did, which has kind of spurred a lot of places like Brazil and the countries in South America, some in Africa and Asia and the likes of that, they've put in this thing that's called an adequacy decision. And for a country to get an adequacy decision and make the transfer of data between the EU and that country quite seamless, that country has to have its own laws and sets of standards that meets the GDPR. Now, India obviously has got a big outsourcing industry there, where a lot of people will outsource admin and data processing and even data input and analytics and the likes of that. So India are coming across with their own quite strict GDPR-like rules, likewise with Brazil. And we're starting to see a lot of other countries pick this up, seeing the opportunity of being able to interact on an international basis and be able to place their country in a prime position. But if you're based in Ghana, you're based in the Africas, then there's no real issue with using international data. You just have to make sure that you're compliant with the laws of the countries where the individuals are. There will be some requirements. So in the EU, or the UK have their own GDPR now since they left the EU, but you're required to have a representative within that country. So that representative acts as your man on the ground, essentially, within the EU and the UK.
Okay, next.
And then this is the last one from Olga. It is my understanding that data is never removed, deleted from any system. It can be recovered with the right tools. Is that correct?
No, there is ways to really scrub your system of data. And if essentially it's like, it's called data retention over here and storage limitation. And you're supposed to, within the whole life cycle of data, have a purpose for each piece of data that you collect and that you use. And then when that purpose is no longer being fulfilled, you're supposed to remove it. In terms of if you have a laptop, for example, and you're conducting your business on the laptop and then you're trading it in, there is ways to get your hard drive scrubbed and you can get it done professionally, or there is if you've got specifically very sensitive data, and there's like lots of really good tools online that can really scrub your actual hardware that will really remove the data. And definitely online, that requirement doesn't cover backups. So as long as your backups have like a timeline and you know after X amount of rounds that the backups are going to be deleted and that data will be deleted off backups, then eventually you will that data will be gone. So yeah, you can, I suppose that's a long way of saying data can be deleted from systems, but it is important to check configuration, and especially if you've got hardware or the device, don't take it for granted that just because you're deleting the file from your home screen that it's gone. That can definitely be recovered, but you can take steps to make sure that it is, that it's removed permanently.
Okay, very good. Was that the last question, Kels, or comment?
Yep, that's it for now. So if you do have any questions for Tom or Norm, just throw them in the comment section and we'll get to them.
Okay, so moving forward, let's talk about what people can do, easy action steps that they can take, and then some mistakes that people make.
Yeah, so I suppose just running, like we have a framework that we run through with clients in terms of how they go about understanding and complying with different data privacy laws. So essentially, as I mentioned probably a few times now, you start with data mapping. But even before that, depending on the size of your business, you know, you want buy-in from your senior staff. And that's really important because, again, if the staff on the kind of front line, if they're your customer success teams or even your sales guys and the likes of that, if they aren't seeing that message being delivered from the top, then the program or any sort of compliance efforts probably won't work, or they won't last, at least.
Can I stop you there? So if we're talking about data mapping, and you're a one person or two person operation, you know, selling e-com, mm-hmm. What is it?
It's really looking at whose data do you have? How did you get it? Why did you collect it? Where you're storing it and what you're using it for? And then eventually how you get rid of it. So it's really understanding that whole life cycle of the data. And so if you're just a one person organization, you can start with a whiteboard or just a big sheet and start saying, okay, here's my customers. This is whose data it is. So maybe you break it up between, okay, we've got European customers, we got US customers, we got African customers and the likes of that. Then we're saying, okay, why do we have it? Is it to fulfill orders? Is it to generate a newsletter list? Is it to sell to them? You know, really understanding the purpose and the why of collecting your data. And then within your business, and even a one person or a two person operation might have like anything up to 20 different SaaS products where they've got their MailChimp, they've got their CRM, they've got their I don't know, their live chat boxes. They've obviously got their emails, their file storage. You got your order fulfillment. Like, when you start actually doing this mapping exercise, you'd be probably surprised at your ecosystem, even just for a small organization. Like, you've probably got a lot of tools, and each different tool that data is shared with is a different third party, and it's just kind of spanning, okay, I collect norms data in the US, but I'm using providers who have data centers all over the world. Now, you don't have to go to the extent of mapping where the data goes, even though you could. But essentially, yeah, it's about knowing that who, what, when, where, why, and then at the end, like, how do we get rid of it around data? Because that really gives you a good view of exactly what data you have, whose it is. And once you know that, and like, you know where those people come from, then you can start mapping on those rules and saying, okay, California just made this requirement that we have a do not sell my data button on our website, or some sort of a way to opt into that. Virginia says that we need to have a positive action. People need to opt in to the use of their data. So by doing the data mapping piece and really laying out in front of yourselves how exactly and where data is used, then that gives you a chance to start looking at, okay, right, should we be doing this with data? Does that individual know that their data may be used in this way? Okay, that's a risk. Let's log that as a risk. And maybe when we hit X amount of revenue, it might become an action to actually work on. So yeah, that's where the data mapping piece comes from. And I suppose that leads into the risk assessment piece. So we have templates available on our website and the likes of that, that really look at risk assessment, and it lets individuals and companies understand, okay, what risks should we associate with the different operations that we do. So for example, quite a common risk would be if you have some sort of sign up portal, or if you're collecting information and passwords, and then you're not making sure that they are encrypted, then that's a big risk, because for better or for worse, people tend to reshare passwords. And a common theme among people who are trying to create, like, do fraud on individuals is to just say hack a website, or to buy information online where your site may have been hacked, and they've got an email address, a password, and then they'll call up this person, or they're emailing them saying, we've got access to all your stuff, we can tell you your password. And the person's like, that is my password, isn't it? Even though it might be a completely unrelated site. And that's kind of the hook that they use to be able to either get the money out of them, or to steal identities, and like to just gather even more information. So while it mightn't seem much to you at the time, by not securing the data that you are trusted with, it can usually lead to harm to the individuals in other ways.
Okay, we'll definitely put up that that link to your website for the risk assessment templates. That was funny, because I was just going to ask you about templates, and you know, getting templates off of like LegalZoom or wherever, you know, typing in Google and getting just contracts or privacy policies. What are your thoughts on that? Should they be custom to your website?
Yeah, well, like, some of the really bad cases is that I'd work with clients and I go on, like, usually first port of call is to look at their privacy policy, and their privacy policy refers to a different company or competitor.
Yeah.
And it's been a pure copy and paste job. So that's definitely a no-go. Definitely, like, there's great resources out there. So I would encourage people to look online, and don't be afraid of using templates, especially when you're in a stage where obviously you can't reach out to a consultant, or it's just not within your budget at the moment. You can find really good information online. We're actually working, and it should, well, no, it's obviously not going to be ready for publication now, but we'll send you on, and maybe you'll be able to give a shout out to your listeners when we have our playbook in place. So we're doing an actual step-by-step do-it-yourself data privacy compliance piece, and it'll be a playbook for our solopreneurs and people that are just getting a start in data privacy. And it really is going to walk you through the whole process of becoming compliant. And we've got a whole suite of templates within that as well. But there's great resources online, and I encourage people to look. But just, yeah, make sure they're customized and make sure they actually reflect what you're doing as a business.
If you've got a website, you're in the US or Canada, do you need to publish anything GDPR?
Yeah, it all depends if you have GDPR or if you have European customers. If you're using the data of European customers, they should be able to look onto your site and have information around their rights and around how they can go about requesting having their data deleted, having a copy of their data, and a lot of the rights that are given to them under the GDPR. And we're starting to see more across US states that these rights are being replicated in US laws. So most laws now have a requirement that if an individual asks you as a business, you have to tell them what data you hold on them and what you're doing with that data. And that's kind of like a very basic right to information. And again, your data mapping exercise will really help you answer these requests if they come in, because you'll know whose data you have, what data, like what specific data it is, and why you're using it and how you're using it. So there's a multitude of rights. That's kind of one of the more basic ones. And yeah, so I would really encourage people to look into where their customers are based, whose data that they have, because then they'll understand what they need to do. So for example, if you've got customers or clients in the EU, then most definitely you need to refer to the GDPR and have a GDPR compliant privacy policy on your site.
You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about this, and it sounds like nickel and dimes, and they do add up, but there's different areas that you have to make sure. Oh, there's the dog. Typical live podcast.
Yeah.
You've got to do a variety of different things. You've got to be able to protect your website. So you can go to, secure your site lock or something like that. It costs you, but you got to protect mm-hmm. that website. Then, you start looking at your own unit, like the computer. Well, we had Chaz Nolan on from CyberOps, and the importance of it, and not protecting your computer with just McAfee or Norton. You know, people have misconceptions that you're protected and you're not. Then you go another layer on your website, and you've got to have ADA compliance, especially in Europe. That's all 100%. Like that was as of a few months ago, you had to have ADA compliance. Then you go and you get cybersecurity insurance. There's all these little things that in general conversation, when you're starting a business, most people don't think about, but you've got to think about these things to make sure that your site is compliant and your risk evaluation is minimal. And now this, you've got to make sure that you've take steps with data privacy. That's your next step for protecting yourself from lawsuits or, having your sites shut down. But mm-hmm. How do people, you got one or two people that are that might be on Amazon. You might have three or four people, but how do you keep up with all this? How do you keep up with the global requirements, national, state? How do you keep up with it?
Yeah, I suppose the big thing is that understanding that they're all coming from similar principles. So people that have a decent amount of business in Europe are starting just to apply European standards across the board. And now they might rein it in a little bit and be a little bit more free in their marketing initiatives and maybe just say cold outreach and stuff, which is a bit looser in the US compared to the EU. But by taking a standard and using that as the baseline for the business, so specifically the GDPR is a good one because it's the kind of high watermark when it comes to global data privacy. If you take that as the baseline of your business and really take effort to understand the GDPR and how it applies to the business, then you're going to be 99% compliant with the rest of the global data privacy laws. And as I said, data mapping is a great place to start. Then layer on top of that, you've got your risk assessment, like take stock of, okay, what risks are here? What type of data I'm collecting? Is it like quite your basic email addresses, passwords, stuff like that, deliveries addresses, or are we in an industry or a business that we're looking for more, to say, health-related data? Are we taking orders over the phone and we've got, heaven forbid, credit card details on post-it notes stuck to your computer screen? So it's kind of taking stock of what exactly is happening and then just taking, trying to do your best to understand it and really trying your best to protect it. Because as you said, we're seeing an evolution now. And before it was like, stick up a website, get traffic to it, and happy days, you've got a business. Now this is just another way of, it's another requirement for a business owner to understand these things. And like for personal data, there is certain businesses and you have to say, okay, I've got my typical shop or an online seller and the likes of that, and they're really dealing with the most minimal amount of data possible to deliver their service, but they still have to take kind of steps to make sure that they're using it properly and correctly and the likes of that. What a lot of these data privacy laws are, and when we're looking at the bigger picture, is that they want to future-proof, I guess, future generations when it comes to their online experience and like the use of technology, because we know that technology is evolving in a way that maybe in 5-10 years, like the ability to identify individuals, the ability to predict their behavior, the ability to do all sorts of things is going to be like 100 times more than it is now. And the laws that are putting in place is trying to future proof and make sure that companies that are coming out now are operating by a set of standards that makes it safer for us in the future and for future generations to really get the most out of online and IoT and technology and the likes of that. So I suppose, yeah, just for your typical businesses, it's like doing a course in finances or bookkeeping and the likes of that. Now we just have to take the effort to try and educate ourselves around what's right and what's wrong when it comes to the use of data.
Yeah, I saw a question come in from Simon.
Yeah, are there any new GDPR, or is any of the new GDPR data security issues due to Brexit?
No, so the UK have adopted their own GDPR. So essentially the way, I won't get into how laws are rolled out across Europe, but basically each country had to adopt the GDPR into their own national law and there was no kind of room for maneuver. So in 2018, the UK had adopted the GDPR into their own law, the Data Protection Act 2018. And now that literally hasn't changed, even though that they've left the EU. It's called the UK GDPR now. So there's been absolutely no change. There's still negotiations happening for the UK to get that adequacy decision to make sure at least the flow of data isn't disrupted between the UK and the rest of Europe. Unlike physical goods, like around Christmas time, just after Christmas, like in January when it became official, like I had stuff ordered on Amazon and it only started arriving in February because there's been such a backlog in customs because of all the checks that now happen due to the UK living. But now there has been no real change in terms of data and the flow of data.
Okay, very good. All right, this is a weird question, but how do I get legally, you're not speaking as a lawyer, but if I do want to send something out and I do not have an opt-in, is there a way around it?
Yeah, so...
Am I putting you in a corner?
A little bit, yeah. Again, this isn't legal advice. This is kind of an opinion and I don't want to be given kind of black hat techniques, but essentially data privacy laws really focus on personal data. So personal data being norm at lunch with Norm, because that's identifying you as an individual. Mm-hmm. If you were to email info@apexprivacy.com, that's not personal data. And that's not
business, right?
That's a business. Yeah. And that's not under the remit of the GDPR or data privacy laws. So if you're focused on businesses and you want to get in contact with that business, then perhaps look for those more generic email addresses or getting an avenue into the company that way. Also, collecting consent over the phone or verbally is an option. Consent doesn't have to be a checkbox. So if you have a conversation with the individual and you're saying, I'd like to send you this, then that's perfectly valid. So you can collect data in that way. When it comes to B2C and you're contacting individuals and you have their data and they haven't given it to you, that's usually a red flag. You have to look at how you got that data, if it was got through correct means, and in general, having that conversation without having any sort of relationship with the individual isn't the way to go. So using somebody's Gmail address when they have never given it to you is generally not advised.
Okay, very good. So let's talk about software. Mm-hmm. So some things to consider before buying data privacy compliance software.
Yeah, I think it's the same kind of things that you have to be aware of when buying any sort of software. So like a good CRM isn't going to make sales for you. You know, like a good project management tool isn't going to run your projects. It's going to enable people that have the experience to be able to do it better. But just relying on, okay, I've bought a tool, and now, unfortunately, a lot of the data privacy tools out there are quite expensive, but we are seeing some movements in the market to make them more accessible to, I guess, your more startup type of solopreneur individuals. But I guess the biggest caveat is to make sure that you're buying a tool that's fit for your business. And that if you are buying a tool, don't be kind of hoodwinked into thinking that this is going to solve all your problems. Because like that example that you just given me, that if your data has come from some sort of bought email list and there's no relationship with the individual, just by logging it on the tool doesn't make it any more compliant. So I think that's the big warning around tools, is that just because you've bought one doesn't mean you're going to be compliant. So probably before you've bought it, you should take steps to understand your data, understand your risks, and what's being asked of you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your company?
Sure. Apex Privacy.
Yes.
Yeah. So as I mentioned at the start, I founded the company because I was working in compliance. I've got a master's in international law. I worked in finance for the best part of 10 years, working with kind of global institutions like JP Morgan and Citi in the US, and over here in Ireland, AIB, as well as across Europe with ED&F, all these acronyms. But essentially, the GDPR came around and we were doing work in finance because we have proper regulation teams and forecasting around upcoming laws. And I got really involved in GDPR probably back in 2015, before a lot of people had really heard about it. And what I saw at the time was that, geez, this is going to put compliance obligations on businesses that have never had to worry about compliance at all. And being a technologist and like loving technology and being a real early adapter to nearly anything, and personally very liberal about handing over my information to try out new things and the likes of that, I saw the opportunity and I understood, okay, you're going to have companies that really are going to struggle with this, and they won't have that history of compliance, and they won't have people that speak their language and the likes of that, because really for a compliance role, it's all about understanding your clients and understanding kind of their prerogatives and being able to speak their language. So that's kind of what gave me the confidence to found Apex Privacy. And while at the beginning, we were very much focused on GDPR compliance, and most of our clients were SaaS companies from the US that had like a foothold in the EU or wanted to make steps towards the EU and the European market. Now we've kind of broadened that remit to really like leverage my background in international law. And we work kind of with global companies. So we do have clients in Asia, Australia, the US, all over really, and helping them make sense of these global requirements. Because imagine like you're there scratching your head as a solopreneur and maybe like with online shops and e-commerce. If you're a SaaS business, you've got all these same problems, except for you've usually got clients that are making you complete vendor assessments and your clients are being really kind of strict. So Australia has a new law, Canada has a new law, different states in the US. So what we do is really help make sense of that and centralize it into a framework. And we work with some great privacy compliance tools, but we always do that assessment to begin with to make sure that our clients are using the right tool and that it's configured properly and that we've done our homework beforehand to make sure that the tool's there to really help the program as opposed to trying to solve any problems. So very much technology enabled. We're very much there to help technology companies make sense of this when I don't want to like start moaning about lawyers, but a lot of people turn to the lawyers when it comes to data privacy compliance, whereas compliance professionals like myself, we're more involved with the business, and lawyers literally have like a zero risk appetite. Whereas when you're working with compliance, you have to understand risk. You have to understand risk that you're willing to take. You'd have to understand risk to the individual's data, but also to the business. And okay, what type of fines are we likely to receive if we're found in non-compliance? How damaging will it to be to our brand and our values and our image if we have a fine and the likes of that? So, or even just bad publicity. So, yeah, without hammering on the lawyers, we're not lawyers. I have a background in law, but we're more on the operational compliance and risk side.
Okay, very good. So it's 1 o'clock, right on. Why don't we get over to the Wheel of Kelsey? Oh, hey, Andrew.
Hey. All right, here we go. You know what time it is.
It's time for the Wheel of Kelsey.
There we go. All right. And let the wheel begin.
Yes. I'll shuffle this up.
All right.
Everyone that entered. And let's go. 3, 2, 1. Okay. Ooh, new winner today.
Oh, Jason. Congrats.
All right, congratulations, Jason. Jason, if you can email me at k@lunchwithnorm.com, I'll get the information over to you and connect you with Tom, and I'll reach out too. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All and right, on that note, sir, thank you for joining us today. That was very informative.
Cheers, Norm. Cheers, Kelsey. It was a pleasure.
All right. Anybody want to get in touch with you? How do they do that?
Yeah, if you go to apexprivacy.com, we have contact forms there. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, just Tom McNamara. And yeah, the podcast, the Data Privacy Podcast, is on Spotify, iTunes, anywhere really that you get your podcasts.
All right, fantastic. Well, you have a good day, sir. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Cheers, guys. It was a pleasure.
All right. So that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed the episode today. You know, it's something that I don't really think about that much, but you know, when you hear this stuff and you hear what Tom has to say, you know, you really got to take a second look and make sure that your privacy policy is put together, that you're following the GDPR. If you know, if you're in or working with international clients, anyways, check them out. I have no affiliate link or anything, you know, just go over, check it out. I think it's worth downloading that template he had on risk evaluation. And other than that, who's coming on Friday?
You don't know? Kevin King, of course.
Oh, no, I didn't. Yes. I thought he was next week. So Mr. King is going to be on Friday. Oh, okay. Very good. See what he's up to.
And actually, for the prize, we have a very nice giveaway from Tony's Cigar. And there's going to be a pretty good
you're
one.
You're going to be happy. Yeah, I know what that giveaway is, by the way. And Tony, I know you're on. I saw you on there today. Thank you very much for donating the prize. That's awesome. So tune in on Friday. Kevin King's going to be here, I hear. But who knows? Kelsey might be wrong. But Kelsey, what else do we have? You got to smash those things and ring bells.
Smash those like buttons. Ring the bell on YouTube. So if you go over to our YouTube page, it's just Norman Farrar. We have the full highlights and full episodes there. I'll put that link in the comments right now. So if you ever miss an episode, you can always head straight over there and catch up on anything you missed. And our clubhouse is back next week, I believe.
Yeah, that's at 1:30.
1:30 p.m. Eastern time. I'll put the links and everything on the Facebook group. So if you haven't joined the Facebook group, this is your time. Head on over there. It's Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA, and E-Commerce Collective. That's where all the good stuff is. If there are any updates, prizes, giveaways, it happens there. So go over there, join, and in contact with us. You can contact me or Norm anytime on the page. If you have any questions about the show, also head on over there, Beer Nation. We love you.
All right. So tune in every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for joining us. Thanks for being part of the community. And enjoy the rest of your day. Lunch with Norm.